Of the Hornets, don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the guys play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Tom, last Saturday, the Tide traveled to Oxford, and it looks like Admiral Akbar was right. It was a trap.
Man, it was a trap. This was the first true test for this Alabama football team. On the road, ESPN game day, still fairly new quarterback. And when the pressure was on, they just didn't have the killer instinct.
No, I agree. I think the pressure, I expected the pressure to really land on Ole Miss. This was a big game, a big setting, a big situation, which their program historically is not used to. I expected we would come in and just, you know, do what we do. Every game for us is a big game. Everyone gives us their best. But it seems that a little bit of role reversal. Ole Miss seemed a little more, at least at stages of the game. It was sort of a slugfest and a defensive struggle at times. It just seemed when the play needed to be made, it was Ole Miss making it.
You know, it was toward the end of the game, okay? But it wasn't at the beginning and in the middle. And I got to go back to Mike DeBose. I know there's been plenty of head coaches that have said three or four plays make a game.
Sure.
He wasn't the only one that has said it, but I couldn't stomach myself to go back and watch this whole game. Okay. We had already watched the whole thing. Couldn't stomach myself to go back and see every single play and rewind it five times a play like we do. But I did have to go back to the third and fourth quarter. And I specifically said, what about those drives where we were deep in their territory and we couldn't put our foot on their throat? And so allow me just to quickly talk about the first series of the second half. We have got the ball. We are driving. Yeldon proceeds to have a big rush for 10 yards to the 50-yard line. I'm sorry. He rushes for 5, then 10 yards to the 50. Then he rushes another 7. After a couple Derrick Henry rushes, you know, Blake Sims completes a third pass to Amari. We got first and 10 at the 24. Okay. You're up 14-3 on the road. It's time to take the crowd out of the game. You got first and 10 at the 24. Your quarterback has done pretty well. He's like 11 of 16. And your running back has already rushed for 100 yards. And now you have just taken the first five minutes off the game clock to start the second half, right? How many times do coaches talk about the first 5 minutes of the game and the first 5 minutes of the third quarter, right, are huge? So then we're sitting here first and 10 at the 24, and Blake Sims, we're pounding them up the middle, and we try to go do a zone read, and Blake Sims basically tries to do too much and he loses 4 yards. Then on the next play, he lost 6 yards. Second and 16 now. He proceeds to throw the ball at the feet of OJ Howard. Then on third down and 16, we call a screen. They read it. There's nobody to throw the ball to because Amari Cooper's down the field blocking for TJ Yeldon to get the screen. And Blake Sims loses another 4 yards. And we proceed to miss a 51-yard field goal with 8 minutes left in the third quarter. That, to me, was the turning point of this ball game. Right there, you get no points on the board. Yeah. You've got them on the ropes. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just jumping in to agree with you. I would be cautious at how much of that I would put at the feet, I guess no pun intended, of Blake Sims. Obviously, if he had connected that pass. But I just think we turtled on our play calling. I think if we had continued to just pound the ball, we had a stretch there where we had great success running to the left behind Kim Robinson, and it just seemed to go away from that. I don't know, you know, if you want to sprinkle in a pass, I get it. But okay, now let's go back to our bread and butter. If we want to get fancy on our next drive, you know, when we're up 21-7, then, you know, 21-3, or, you know, whatever the score was there, when we've really extended the lead, then I think that's where we do it. But you've driven the field running the ball, you put it in the end zone running the ball.
Well, now let me be clear. They've completed 5 passes on that drive up until this point, 7 runs, okay, because CBS broke down the play distribution at that point. And last time we did a podcast, I gave praise to Blake Sims. I'm not putting this loss on Blake Sims. I'm putting those on Blake Sims. I am putting those 3 plays on Blake Sims, and I'm putting them right on the toes of his cleats, because on the zone read, just fall to the ground at line of scrimmage. Don't take a loss. And then on that third down play, don't take another loss of 6 yards. He comes off the field. Nick Saban holds 2 fingers up to him, and you can read his mouth. He said, "Your 2 plays just cost me a field goal." And Gary Danielson says it right after Saban does. So my point is, you got 1st and 10 at the 24. Adam Griffith makes a 41-yard field goal. Now you're up 17-3. You keep the pressure on, right? You get hopefully a long kickoff. You make them drive the length of the field. Instead, you give them all the momentum. So, yes, on those 3 plays, when he came off the sideline, Gary Danielson said it best. He said something to the fore about being a game manager. He said being a game manager is so critical, and right there he didn't do it or something. And so, yes, a new quarterback, 5 games into being a starter, which is why he's a new quarterback, right? That right there, that little series, a third-year senior, a guy who's been playing like our past quarterbacks for 2 or 3 seasons, doesn't make those mistakes on those 3 plays. They don't cost us a field goal. They don't cost us a field goal by taking 10 lost yards on 2 plays, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'm not a big fan of some of the play calling, you know, there. And maybe it's just the zone read that I don't like. And there's something about, you know, and I'll say this and you know what I mean. There's something about running the zone read against a zone read team. We do it because, you know, we have a quarterback that can do it, and we kind of sprinkle it in, and it's not really who we are, but it's something that we can do. Ole Miss is a little bit, you know, I'm not pigeonholing them and, you know, saying that they're just zone read, you know, kind of like Ohio State was a couple of years ago. But they do quite a lot of that type of, you know, mobile running quarterback, you know, moving the ball around in that way. It just seems that that's the wrong team to try to get that kind of clever with, because, you know, that's the play they can make in their sleep. They've seen it in practice since August.
Oh, sure. And I agree with you. The play calling was I didn't love the play calling there either. I'm just saying, if it's not there, okay, if it's not there, just throw the ball away on third down instead of losing 4 more yards. And on first down, if the zone read wasn't there because they had too many guys that you couldn't block them all, then just fall to the ground. Take a loss of 1 yard instead of 5 yards on first down. That's what I'm saying. And to your point, we've been effectively running the ball on those last 4 plays, last 5 plays, 3 by T.J. Yeldon and 2 by Derrick Henry. Play action pass would have been a great call on that first down instead of that zone.
I'll go with that, right, because that's a play call that's sort of integrated into what you're doing and what you're having success with. You know, you mentioned the 2 running backs, T.J. Yeldon. At one point, you know, we looked up and we were surprised to see that he had topped 100 yards, because it just didn't feel like we were having a 100-yard, you know, running performance. You know, we also talked about Henry and I'll call it his tentativeness running the ball. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, on that particular series, he had 2 5-yard runs back-to-back. But all in all, I think we definitely, you know, I don't know if it's still the shoulder or what's causing him to run a little tentative, because there was nobody on that defense tattooing anybody. You know, I'm not gonna fall over myself in love with this defense like some people are after this game. I mean, they played okay, but when you have a 100-yard rusher at the start of the third quarter, you're not doing all that. And so I wish we would have had a Kenyon Drake to come in at that point and spell T.J. Yeldon, because TJ Yeldon had just gained 22 yards on three straight carries, and he came out because he was a little tired. He finished 20 carries for 124 yards, whereas Derrick Henry only had 17 for 52 yards. So his average was 2.2. I'm sure you and I could go back and see that as his lowest average in an Alabama uniform.
Yeah, I definitely agree. His numbers were a little subpar. He just, you know, and he has some nimbleness, which is very impressive for his size. But he looked to rely too much on that. There's, you know, when you're running in a phone booth and you're 240 pounds, sometimes you just have to lower your shoulder and take what's yours. And he seemed to want to be a little more upright and a little more dancy than just lowering a shoulder and tattooing someone back. I like the Ole Miss defense. I think they have some really good parts and pieces, and they certainly have a number of players that we were really after in the recruiting process. You know, they don't have the numbers necessarily, but I thought that at stages of the game they played very, very well. But yeah, they didn't necessarily have a headhunter out there that was, you know, that was taking names all day long. But it seemed that Henry could have run with a little more want to.
Well, we finished with 400 yards of offense. We had 75 plays, which means they couldn't get us off the field. We averaged over 5 yards a play. There wasn't anything dominating by their performance. I would argue our play calling getting too conservative and cutesy and some misexecution by a non-seasoned quarterback, all of that sprinkled in together is what really did us in, because we had 3 times that we had the ball inside their 25-yard line in the third and beginning of fourth quarter, and we came away with 3 points. You don't come into a second half up 14-3 on the road against somebody who you haven't lost to in 10 years and have 3 drives inside the 25 and come away with just 3 points.
Well, and that's fair. You can't do that. And you've demonstrated, you know, by driving the ball down there that you can move the ball, that you can beat them. You know, you're right. We did put up over 400 yards of offense, which it's kind of ironic for us to, you know, that is a big number, but relative to our last 5 or 6 games, that is a low number.
Right.
That's kind of fun to think. It's at least fun to think about. But when you juxtapose it with our defensive play, and we've been a little frustrated with our defense, you know, we held them to about 105 yards in the first half.
Correct.
That is a good defensive performance. You know, if you like, there's a couple different ways I want to go here, right? But, you know, when you look at, you know, we had 13 offensive possessions and punted 6 times. That's a horrible ratio. You know, they only had 14 possessions. That includes the one at the end of the game where the time ran out. And, you know, they had actually 2 possessions at the end of halves. So one at the end of the first half where there was really no time for them to do anything with, and another possession at the end of the game where really they were just kneeling the ball. So if you really want to discount their 14 possessions down to 12 possessions, they had 6 punts as well. And so they punted, you know, as many times. And if you discount the 2 and a half possessions, you know, their ratio was just a tad bit higher. So what this game reminds me of, and I really say this to say the next point, and it really builds on, you know, what you said. You drive the ball inside the 20 and you walk away with 3 points and you do that 3 times. You know, I almost sat up in bed last night with the thought that this game reminds me of, the score's a little bit different, the opponent's a little bit different, but there's elements of this game that very much remind me of the 2011 LSU game when they came to Tuscaloosa and they won that game. The defense has played very, very well in that game. We drove the field. You know, we even made a big to-do on our podcast at the time and put up some graphics on the website. We just missed field goals. And this was the type of game where both defenses played well, and you get into the red zone and, you know, you get pushed back, you make bad plays, penalties or a sack, you give away yardage and you miss field goals. Those are the games, you said it, you know, deserve to lose. I can't disagree with that. This feels like a game where when you have every opportunity to score, you can't, you can't piss it away. And if you just make those field goals, much less convert one of them into a touchdown, but you just make those 2 field goals and it's at least a tie game at the end, which I think gives the game a little more personality. And in fact, I'll say this, if you add those 3 points at the stages of the game where you would have gotten them, you would have contributed to demoralizing Ole Miss, because they scored 2 touchdowns on 2 of their last 3 possessions. So they were really fighting there at the end. If you had scored those points earlier on, I think maybe you demoralize them a little bit.
First of all, you should have got a touchdown, but if you just, the way you came out of the second half, right, it's the way you script it in the locker room. But if you, you're sitting there just driving it down their throat. I'm sorry, Yeldon's, just going back to this real quick for everybody, first and 10 at the 35 on play 4, okay? Blake Sims completes his first 2 out of the halftime, and then T.J. Yeldon 5 yards, T.J. Yeldon 10 yards, T.J. Yeldon 7, Derrick Henry 5. Come on. I mean, you've got 5 runs in a row there where you have just gained 32 yards on 5 carries. That's 6 yards a carry. You're just blowing them up, and you're at the 24-yard line. And so,
keep running. Keep running.
I just think that, to your point, if you just get a field goal there, which is where I am going to hang those couple plays on Blake Sims, on those couple plays, because had he just not taken that loss of 10 yards, it's a 41-yarder. It's 17-3. Now we try to pin him back. Now Bo Wallace starts to feel the pressure, right? Who knows what happens there, right? So, hey, another thing I want to go to is I do want to go to the loss of Kenyon Drake, because going back to your Derrick Henry point, Kenyon Drake only got to be in there for a couple plays, but of course they were electric as always. That was a gruesome Joe Theismann like injury. The way we saw during the game, I think not having him in there with Derrick Henry being so tentative really hurt us, because had we had another ball carrier who could have gotten 10 carries for his usual. You know how we do it, right? The first guy gets 20 carries for over 100 yards. The second guy gets 10 carries for 7 yards a carry. Had we just had that second guy to carry that load, I think it changes the complexion of this ball game. Or real quick, just feed T.J. Yeldon 10 more times. I can also argue that if Derrick Henry didn't have it, let his other ass be a workhorse and just make T.J. Yeldon carry it 30 times in that ball game.
Yeah, I think we could have given it to T.J. a couple more times. I mean, I wonder, and I only wonder, if Tyron Jones had been available, would he have gotten some carries? And I wonder at some point, why don't you just put Alti Tenpenny in and at least give him a couple of carries? Maybe see if he's got a hot hand. And so there's a reason there that we'll never know. But the loss of Drake, I don't want to pave over that. The loss of Drake, I think, is pretty significant, especially given how we've seen him be dynamic. We've seen, I'll call it the Kiffin effect, in getting him out of the doghouse, and not just out of the doghouse, but getting him integrally involved in our offense. You know, we saw it to open the game against Florida, how dynamic he can be with his speed and space. And the options that can give us, and then obviously we've seen him running the ball out of the backfield. I think that he brings a lot of versatility that we're going to miss in our offense. And to think that to speculate that his loss in the game, and I've kind of confronted this. That's why I say it this way. To think that his loss in this game had no impact or no bearing on the outcome of the game, I think is just, that's just faulty logic.
Do I think we should have still won despite his injury? Yes. The stuff we just said a minute ago, we still should have won despite his injury. But I can't remember who said this that I'm going to steal it from, but I read somewhere where somebody was referring to Kenyon Drake after this loss as one of the quickest players. What did he say? He said the acceleration that he has gotten to by his 4th or 5th step is as quick as few he's seen in college football. Just where he gets on that 4th and 5th step and how he's able to build up his acceleration is huge. And so I hate it for the kid, because the kid has overcome a lot. And I wish him a speedy recovery. And I really think that, you know, one of Lane Kiffin being able to use him in so many different, interchangeable ways, will be missed. Hey, one other thing I want to mention to you is Blake Sims came out of the first half and he was 10 out of 15 and Bo Wallace was 6 out of 16. So Bo Wallace wasn't even completing 30-40% of his passes in the first half.
Right.
And so he hadn't even thrown but for 60 or 70 yards. I was surprised when I went and looked back at the stats at the end of the game that so Blake Sims started 10 of 15. He finished 19 of 31. So he only completed about 50% of his passes on in the second half. Were you surprised that we didn't try to get, you know, we knew they were going to use DeAndre White as a decoy. Okay. But were you surprised that we really didn't try to get some other guys involved in the passing game? I was really surprised when I went back to see OJ Howard as your second leading pass catcher with 3 receptions. But Chris Black had 2 and Christian Jones had 1. I'm just surprised we didn't get our Darius Stewart involved. I'm just surprised we didn't get some of the other receivers involved in this ball game.
Yeah, I am almost dumbfounded, you know, by that. We talked about the running backs and not bringing some of them and we're potentially could, especially with some injury there. I am dumbfounded that we're not seeing, especially our Darius Stewart. I kind of, especially with, you know, DeAndre White, you know, injured, you know, tentative, he is playing more as a decoy. While we're not seeing our Darius, clearly he's on special teams, so it's not an injury. Or work to Chris Black a little bit more. You know, in the preseason, I would have bet Cam Sims was going to redshirt, but we've seen him, and so now that he can't redshirt, why is he not out there? And at least he's someone that's fast, that's healthy, that's big. I'm kind of dumbfounded that we're not going to some of those guys. I mean, go to Christian Jones more. You know, it doesn't have to be one of the guys that we don't understand why he's not playing. Just go to some of the guys that are playing more. Go to Chris Blackmore. Go to go to some of the other guys. It is surprising that. You know, and Amar had a decent day. He's been putting up sort of world-class days, but, you know, he had 9 catches for 91 yards. That's not a bad day for an Alabama wide receiver. So
it's not a bad day at all, but to your point, if you know DeAndre White is hurt and the coaches know he really probably shouldn't even be out there, then Chris Black needs more than 2 catches. Christian Jones needs more than – I mean, I'll just tag on what you just said. There's no way your other fifth-year – you got 2 fifth-year seniors. There's no way Christian Jones should have 1 catch for 17 yards in that ball game. None whatsoever. Yeah. Figure out. So you know that play that they put him in the backfield and they sweep the ball around to him? Or excuse me, he runs out in the flats and they throw the ball to him?
Yep.
We haven't seen that play all season. But I just felt like that I felt like Ole Miss was intent on saying Cooper's going to get his 100 yards passing. But nobody else is gonna, you know. In other words, we're gonna stay on Cooper, and we're gonna make sure Cooper doesn't do his world class. And if he gets his 100, we can't stop that. But we're just gonna worry about him. And I just don't feel like we checked off to other wide receivers and tried to get enough guys involved. Like, did you ever see us do a 4 or 5 wide in the game?
No, I certainly not 5. I don't think 4. We ran a lot of bunch formations. You know, maybe our mindset was to try to just pound them. But then at times when we started to pound them, we didn't continue to pound them. We kind of let off. But we left the bunch personnel in, which kept us from being able to maybe go 4 wides and stress their backfield, defensive backfield. So, you know, those are the types of things that – frankly, I just didn't understand with some of the play calling. You know, once I'm kind of, you know, down on our play calling, I do want to call out one play call that you and I both were phenomenal, or we thought was phenomenal, and certainly the cameraman was juked out as well. But when Blake scored his touchdown, you know, he faked a handoff and then, you know, kind of ran around the edge. That was a very impressive play. I was disappointed that we tried to bring that play back a series or two later. You know, you get one of those that wide open on that kind of run, you get maybe a couple of those a month. You don't get two in a ball game.
No, you don't. Give me what your take was on Ryan Kelly. I don't think Bozeman did bad. We obviously had to burn a couple timeouts right after Bozeman came in. But the timing of Kelly going out also, you know, I know some people are going to say, oh, you're just going to make excuses. Well, you still got a fairly new quarterback, and he loses his center on the road in the second half. That's also going to cause some problems.
Yeah, I mean, there's excuses and there are reasons. And if you're astute with really what's going on, you can discern the difference. And so you got Denzel Washington Denzel Duvall, a starting linebacker who goes out in the first series. You got Drake, one of the more dynamic electric weapons on offense. He goes out, and then your starting center, one of the more critical line positions, he goes out and is brought in with, replaced with Bradley Bozeman. I'm glad he got a little run earlier in the season when we brought him in with the starters. That just that seemed very fortuitous, given that he had to come in this situation, game on the line. But you take a center, you know, who's making the line calls. You bring him in not just in a, hey, let's try to get you some snaps because that'll be cool, but you bring him in a game on the line type situation. I think it can limit what you do. Maybe it can limit some of your blocking schemes. Maybe it can limit what you're trying to do on offense because he has, you know, maybe his deficiencies because, you know, he's a backup first time getting some extended play there. If you don't recognize those as reasons rather than excuses, then there's something to be said about that. But yeah, I think that was a big loss. It did cost us some timeouts. Those things can be valuable to have later in a ball game. And so anytime you expend those types of currencies unnecessarily, yeah, it can cost you later in a ball game.
Hey, what did you think about the interception thrown at the end of the game by Blake? You know, I really respect the fact that he came out and said, that's on me. He said, I saw the double coverage. I saw the second guy coming over. I tried to force it there. Didn't need to do that. Once again, I think that's just what you get from a quarterback in game five of his career on the road for the first time versus a seasoned quarterback who's already been chewed out by Nick Saban years past and knows not to do it. But I respect him for coming out and saying, hey, didn't have to take that shot there. Didn't need to do that.
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of different things there on that. I think that that's a play that's easy to judge in hindsight. You know, we saw McCarron in Penn State and, you know, his first real start. You know, he threw the ball through a couple of windows. I'll probably still never forget the catch of Michael Williams, where it looked like it just went through a defender. It's just, you know, it looked like an impossibly tight window. And that's a play that, you know, probably he shouldn't have thrown that ball, but he did.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it's easy to kind of look at this in hindsight, and you could reason that a quarterback, and, you know, I'll just say McCarron again, you could reason that he could look at, that a young McCarron could look at that situation and say, yeah, that's a tight window, but I can do that. And that Blake Sims, not a young quarterback in the same way, but certainly young relative to starting, where he may have thought, yep, that's a tight window, but I can make that. Maybe his arm isn't as strong, or maybe, you know, sometimes you throw the tight windows and you don't get it. So I think it was a good play call. We were having some success moving the ball. Let's take a strike where maybe they think we're going to still be methodical. I think that he had so much want to in that pass that maybe he pulled the trigger when he shouldn't have. Thought it was a good play call. Clearly, the execution isn't what you'd want there. And I wonder if it's too easy to grade that in hindsight.
Oh, no, no. What I'm trying to say is I respect the fact he said his quote was, yeah, I saw him. I made the wrong decision. He did make the wrong decision. He should not have thrown that ball into double coverage to O.J. Howard. You maybe get away with it if it's Amari Cooper because he can just do magical things. But yes, that ball should not have been thrown there, period. And I respect the guy for coming out and saying, that's on me. I thought that
that's one of the things I wanted to count. I'm glad you kind of took us back there, because I think you have to give him, you have to respect, you know, like you said, you have to respect him owning that. Every time he has had the opportunity, now this is the first time we've lost a game, but every time he's had an opportunity to say, this is on me, that's my mistake, I've got to do better, I've got to improve. I mean, he has the right mentality. There's a part of me that wishes maybe he was just a redshirt sophomore, because the ownership that he's taking and the progress that we have seen from him and the ownership that he's taking over circumstances, you know, makes you wonder, well, what could he be if he was introduced to Kiffin a couple years ago? And I've read, you know, a couple interesting articles where, you know, Kiffin actually tried very, very hard to recruit him to Tennessee. And in fact, Sims decommitted from us to commit to Tennessee. And like the next day, Kiffin was offered and accepted the USC job. So, you know, some things are kind of ironic how they come back around. Blake Sims was never going to be a quarterback at Alabama until Lane Kiffin comes back to town. So sometimes, you know, fact is more interesting than fiction.
No, absolutely. Hey, anything else that jumped out at you on offense? Were you surprised that Leon Brown took a seat after his penalties and didn't play the fourth quarter?
Well, you know, we seem to have been rotating. You know, he seems to do something frequently to get him parked, and then, you know, and then so we'll go to Taylor, and then he'll do something to get himself parked. And they just, they're like the Doghouse Brothers or something. They're like a tag team doghouse team at that guard position. One of them will get a penalty, they'll bring the other one in, and he'll play until, you know, the next game, and he gets the penalty or something. There's some weird there's a strange relationship going on there. I'll say that.
Well, I thought it was key, because right after Ole Miss gets their garbage touchdown to make it 14-10, after that last drive we just talked about, we had it 1st and 10 at their 19-yard line. I'm sorry, then 2nd and 6 at the 15, and that's when he had his false start call on Leon. And so I just thought it was interesting in that moment that he brings him out. He brings in Alfonso, knowing that we've already got no Ryan Kelly. So you bring in your second backup in the middle of that offensive line. I just thought that was an interesting to bring him in when you've already got your backup center in there. Now you got two young guys next to each other.
Well, and you know, Alfonso started some this year too, so I wouldn't consider him a young guy in the same way that I would consider Bozeman a young guy. But you do have, you know, two guys that didn't start the ball game in there. I will, you know, that's definitely something that's interesting. You know, I want to go back and just highlight, and we'll highlight, you know, an opponent, you know, where it's appropriate, right? But on that interception, you know, there's a little bit of me that just gives a tip of the cap to the defender who caught that, just barely in bounds, that Sanquez Golson. And, Tommy, we talked about this during the game. He is the defensive back that was really just victimized by Trent Richardson and just one of his magical runs. You know, Golson almost had Trent, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, stuck with the play, and then was just juked out of his, you know, jockstrap, you know, at the 3-yard line before Trent scored. And, you know, we were doing the podcast back then, and we talked about that being a phenomenal play. But we gave hats off to that guy, to Golson, for sticking with the play. And the fact that he had the opportunity to get beat by Trent twice on the same play, about 60 yards between the times that he got beat, that really spoke to his resilience and that, you know, he showed some tenacity there that would go on and maybe serve him well in his career. Unfortunately, that had to come back in the person of an interception there where maybe we still had something that could have got us on the scoreboard. So hats off to him, darn it.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, man. I don't think I could have been a big enough person to give him kudos on that, but I understand where you're going with that. Anything else on offense you got there?
No, I don't think so. Give me your mini game ball on offense.
You know, that's just tough on this game. Because there's really no mini game ball performances as far as non-headline guys. I'm going to go ahead I'm just going to go ahead and give it to Chris Black because he still qualifies as a mini game ball. I wish he'd have gotten more opportunities. I wish he'd have been in there late in the game. I think he's not getting enough chances, but he had two catches. Two balls were thrown his way. He caught both balls thrown his way, and he continues to work himself into the offense. And so while it wasn't a big stat line, I'm going to give it to Chris Black.
It's fair, and what that does is it really emphasizes the question, why is he not given the opportunity? Because every time he goes in, you know, and he's not lighting up the stat sheet, but every time he goes in, he makes his catches. And so if
catches everything times, thrown his way, right?
Yep. If he's targeted two times, he has two catches, and so. It kind of begs the question, why isn't he given a little more of an opportunity? I think that's a fair pick. I'm going to go with, maybe you could reason it that this isn't, this guy's too big for a mini game ball, but, I'm giving it to Cam Robinson, the offensive lineman. I don't know if an offensive lineman is ever too big for a mini game ball, but, you know, we had a lot of success running over to the left. We drove the ball. You know, running to the left, and that really speaks. You know, he's a true freshman. That really speaks to his development, his performance, and that is one thing I can walk away from this game with, excited about. We still have some, obviously a lot of talent and some young guys that are going to continue to grow and develop and learn from an opportunity like this. And you know, Cam Robinson may be a guy that's on that list for me.
No, I think he did play a pretty good game. There was a couple lapses there from him in spots, but he's a true freshman. He definitely played definitely had more don't know what he graded out, but I'm sure he graded out in the mid 90s for sure in that ball game. Hey, let me when we flip the field to defense, let me jump in first if I can and just talk about something on defense. I want to tie to what we were just talking about on that offensive drive, because going back to those three or four plays being so critical, I think those couple plays that cost us that missed field goal followed that up with some defensive lapses. And so if you put those three plays on Alabama offense and the next three plays on Alabama defense, that's what's cost them the ball game. And so they get to start the ball off on the 34-yard line because we've now missed a field goal. First and 10, Bo Wallace gets ran out of bounds by Xavier Dixon for a loss of 2 yards. Good job, Xavier Dixon. And then on the very next play, he completes a pass. So very next play, he completes his 50-yard bomb to a tight end to the 18-yard line. And so, I'm sorry, it wasn't six plays that cost us the game. It was five plays. On that second down play, we have got Maurice Smith on the right side in the slot covering nobody. We have got Tony Brown and Nick Perry over here to cover two of the three, four receivers in the bunch formation. And we've got Trey Dupree standing behind Reggie Ragland at linebacker position. So he's not over in front of the tight end in the slot. He's behind Reggie Ragland. And when the ball is snapped, the tight end just runs right past him. He tries to go and hold him and get a pass interference, and he can't grab his jersey. And he proceeds to just go down the field. Nick Perry notices it when it's too late, and so does Landon Collins. And 50 yards later, he gets tackled at the 18-yard line. And so that one little lapse right there, did they mean for Trey Dupree to cover the slot? I don't think so, because Maurice Smith was covering nobody. And so when you go back and watch that on the highlight, that's just so frustrating.
Yeah, no, that very much is. You know, there was another you know, another time where they had the slot receiver, and in fact, they had three receivers on one side, and we only had one, you know, one cornerback over there. And, you know, somehow Ole Miss called a timeout there. Why they didn't recognize that they have two open receivers is absolutely beyond me. But we were fortunate on that play, not so fortunate on the others. You know, I think, and we can talk a lot about the defense. There's just a couple of points that really stick out to me. And my biggest point on defense, I've seen some press for Landon Collins is getting some negative press, out of position a couple times. And I agree he was, but look, here's my interpretation of that situation. It starts at linebacker. And we talked about this in the preseason that may be our most suspect position on the defense. Losing to C.J. Mosley, we've got a lot of names, we've got a lot of talent, but we don't have the talent that's ready to play that's anywhere similar to what C.J. Mosley was. And so we've got two linebackers out there, Trey Dupree and Reggie Ragland, who are good linebackers, but they're especially good linebackers, you know, circa 2004. But in today's defense, you know, predicated on how offenses are played, where the linebacker needs to have coverage skills. It's not a nice to have, it's a need to have. They are attack the box inside, you know, middle linebackers. And what I think is happening is they're getting beat over the top. And we've talked about this the last couple weeks. Well, what do you do then, right? It's like when you injure yourself and you have a compensating injury, right? Because other muscle groups try to compensate for the sort of the injury there, if you will. And so what do you get? You get Landon Collins playing more towards the box, and you get Landon Collins not peeking in the backfield to stop the run, because the linebackers can do that. He is leaning to the inside route coverage. And so he's not trying to do their job and tackle the runner. He's trying to do their job and defend the underneath passes. And he's leaning the wrong way and then gets beat up top, because then he's not doing his job as free safety.
Well, I hear what you're saying, okay, on most plays. But just like I was calling it straight on Blake Sims, let's do the same here, okay? Blake Sims is the quarterback of your offense. Trey Dupree is your veteran quarterback of your defense. So I'm going to rank who screwed that play up. I got three guys in the row. First is Trey Dupree. Okay. You are the quarterback. You are the signal caller. That falls on you. Second, Nick Perry. You are a fifth-year senior, and you are back there covering the second guy in the bunch. You can clearly see that Maurice Smith is over there by himself. And then third will be the other safety, Landon Collins, because Landon Collins is on the other side of the field, and currently he's over there with two DBs, and they're covering one wide receiver. So I'm going to put Landon third on that list, but he's over there behind Maurice Smith in the slot covering nobody, and he's over there behind Cyrus Jones covering one wide receiver. So between Trey Dupree and then Nick Perry and Landon Collins, somebody should have saw that nobody was on that third guy.
Well, and that's a lot of experience too. You know, Trey Dupree is a fourth-year senior. Nick Perry's a fifth-year, and you know, Landon Collins is a junior. But you know, which you know, it's a junior, right? And so it's his third year in, and so that is a mighty lot of experience to have. You know, what is that? 12 years of experience. That's a lot of experience back there. You know, amongst those three guys to have those types of lapses.
And like I said, I'm trying to rank it in order, right? Because Trey Dupree is the captain, right? He's the quarterback of the defense, so it falls on him first. But you and I couldn't see it as well because we were watching on TV, right? But if we had been in the stadium and we had seen one receiver out wide to the left, and we had seen two cornerbacks and a safety over the top, what would we have been screaming? We would have been screaming to the other side before the play called. We would have seen that Trey wasn't going to get to that guy before the play was ever snapped. Now, is it one play? Are they human? Yes, they're human. It's one play. But damn, that one play came at a bad time.
That was did. And you know, I'm thinking, you know, a lot about the touchdown that really was the go-ahead touchdown that they scored, where I really do think they caught Landon leaning towards the underneath route. I think I do, you know, I think both can be true, right? We can talk about the play that you're kind of tagging for us, and then you know the play that really stood out to me, their go ahead touchdown. I think it had a lot to do with our, you know, and we're kind of landing on the same point. We're just approaching it differently. I think what continues to be a deficiency on our defense is our linebacker's ability to cover.
Oh, it is. I don't think teams have actually gone after that as much as they could have so far.
Absolutely. Absolutely not as much as they could have. If I were playing us, I would throw it to
the tight end 8 times if I was playing against us.
Absolutely. Put your track shoes on, tight end. We're going after you. And, we're going to run as many tight ends today as we've got. Because there's yards to be had back there, and I don't know what the fix for that is, right? You know, we know that we have some very good athletic. We really went after athletic, capable linebackers, but they're also young, and so you know, there's part of me that says, well, they're too young to really get out there and play. But then there's a part of me that says, well, you know, T.J. Mosley was out there, and you know we were hailing his play very early in his freshman season. And so you think, well, you know, maybe we just got to put one of these guys out there. Maybe we've just got to give it a try. Or do we just go to a lot more nickel and dime? Do we just see a lot more dime this season to provide that over the top? And it's not really over the top, but it's over like the middle of the field. Coverage, put some coverage there. Do we just go to a lot of dime, or do we bring out a young guy?
Well, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. We've said either we were going to see a guy like a Rashawn Evans brought in to give that try to as the single linebacker, because what we did when CJ was here is CJ was the single linebacker in that situation. So what I'm confused by is you've got 2nd and 14 because they've lost 4 yards. They come out in a 4 wide, and you come out with both Reggie Ragland and Trey DePriest. When they show they have not run the ball effectively at all. So now it's an obvious passing situation, and you and I have said either bring in an athletic linebacker or we've said put Landon Collins in the box, right? We even talked a couple weeks ago about one of the things we saw Bama do was put Landon Collins next to the linebacker, and he just ran with the tight end. Well, guess what? If you would have just had a Geno Smith or a Landon Collins 5 yards off the ball in the box, he could have ran with the tight end. But instead, you put the safeties. I just don't understand why the safeties were 25 yards off the ball on 2nd and 14, and they come out in a 4-wide formation. Why do you have two linebackers in a 4-wide formation? That makes no sense.
Well, and especially those two linebackers, because they are, you know, more of a traditional middle linebacker, a run stuffing middle linebacker. Not what you need on not what you need. You don't need two of them.
Yes,
on,
but it's 2nd and 14. It's 2nd and 14. It's an obvious passing situation. I mean, look at this, man. Their starting running back had 11 carries on the day for 39 yards.
Right.
That's all he did.
Yeah.
I mean.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. So, you know, we can take away some of our attention to the run because guess what? They're probably not going to do it, and we could probably do it anyways.
Yeah. Drives me crazy, man. Because that drive right there, they scored on a 4-play drive. And so the media is going to come back and say, oh, they did all this. No, they didn't. They had a busted play, got 50 yards, and then they picked on our true freshman, Tony Brown. The kid, he threw to his back shoulder. He made a good play, scored a 10-yard touchdown. Big deal. biggest thing they did was that 50-yard play. Anything else that jumps out at you on the defensive side of the ball?
You mentioned Tony Brown, and so I think that I want to talk about him. That was he got a lot of extended action, and where they were really after him, and I thought it was clever that the way they went after him. They did a lot of back shoulder, and one thing and I've heard Chris Carter talk about this, NFL Hall of Famer, right? And he's talked about it's really hard for a defensive back to defend, and in fact, it's impossible for a defensive back to defend two routes at the same time. And that's really what the back shoulder gives you. You got to cover over the top, which frees you for the back shoulder. Or if you stay in his back pocket, then the corner can beat you over the top. And so I think they really went after him. You're not going to go broke making a profit, right? And so every time Laquan Treadwell would sort of drive the field and then get the back shoulder and get, 6, 7, 8 yards every time he got that back shoulder, you can move the ball down the field. And so you're not giving anything away to get those back shoulders. But then what you buy is Tony Brown cheating on the back shoulder, and then you can beat him over the top. And we had that happen as well. So it's easy to kind of look at, man, Tony Brown had a really bad day. Tony Brown had a freshman learning how to play SEC defense is what Tony had. And I think that he's got that experience and he's got that game tape. I think he's going to improve from that performance. And I think it's super critical that we recognize and appreciate he had a rough day, but he's going to get better for it.
He will get better for it. I also want to touch on the fact that I was surprised that we didn't see more Geno Smith in this ball game.
I know
Nick Perry was back after a spotty, sitting out the first half of the previous game and playing, some in the second half. But I really thought we'd see more dime situation, Geno covering the slot or Geno helping in the back. And instead we saw Maurice Smith played as much as Geno, and once again, you and I feel like Geno is one of our more versatile guys, and I just didn't understand why he wasn't on the field more.
Yeah, I agree with that. I am surprised that we're at this stage of the season and we've not really seen any big plays from Geno. Part of that is he's not playing as much as I thought he would or should. I think we saw Derek on the field, which probably cuts into Geno's playing time a little bit. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because I think Geno is a guy you put out there and you let him, over the course of the ball game and multiple ball games, you let him make plays because he's going to bail you out more times than not. And so it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Hey, anything else from you on defense?
I want to give a nod to a couple players, but I've got one of them circled for my mini game ball, and I bet you've got the other one circled. So we can go to mini game ball unless you've got something.
No, that's fine. I was going to do the same. I just figured we'd cover this in mini game ball. So mine is, I know who yours is going to be as well, but mine's going to be Xavier Dixon, which you could have guessed that. Denzel Duvall goes down very early. Xavier Dixon is asked to play a considerable more snaps than he's accustomed to playing. And whenever Denzel first went down, you and I made the comment, Xavier Dixon, it's time for you to have a day. Well, I'm sorry. The boy had 5 solos. He had 1 assist, 3.5 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks. And so, I'm just really happy to see that. Coach says when a guy gets hurt, next guy's number is called. Well, his number was called, and he said, Coach, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, and he absolutely performed at that level. So I did predict, who you were going to go with. You probably do know who I'm going to go with. If I were to say who is the most, I think, underrated performer on our team right now, to me, it's Cyrus Jones. And so he gets my mini game ball. He's another guy. You rattled off Xavier's stats. You could do the same for Cyrus. 3 tackles, a tackle for loss, a fumble, fumble recovery, you know, for a touchdown. He had two pass breakups, which is significant. He was flagged at one point. I don't even think he gets, man, he gets some of the worst flags I think we've seen all season. If we put a reel together of the flags that he's gotten this season, it's just outrageous. Some of the horrid calls that he's had made against him. He's just a guy that no one thought, or, and you know, would color us in this, you know, in these lines too at different times, that just didn't think that he had a long-term future or potential at this position. But one thing you can't do is get him off the field right now. And I think he continues to grow and to develop. He's only 5'10", so he's an inviting target for opposing teams to go after. But he just seems to continue to acquit himself well. And I'm going to continue to salute him as long as he's doing that.
Well, I will tell you that, you know, he definitely got away with, you know, with the face mask. Glad that wasn't called.
He did. We got to have all that. He did. He absolutely did.
I'm also going to say, just keeping it real, that, you know, I think they picked on the true freshman more. And so I don't think he got as many opportunities because I can't, you know, somebody covered it and they said something like they went after Tony 8 times versus 2 or 3 for Cyrus. But when they did go Cyrus's way. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I only think they went after him 3 or 4 times in the whole game. And so when they did go after him, you know, he made the play. And the play on that fumble, when he made that play in the beginning, at the end of the first half, I really thought that was going to put the dagger in them. And so that was a huge play that he made. Well, the guy that I thought you were going to say was Reggie Ragland. And so we got to put him in here real quick, because you and I saw him make some very physical hits on guys. And he just made some of those punishing tackles that you like to see your middle linebacker do. And I just think he was flying to the ball pretty nicely on a couple hits in this ball game.
Going downhill and attacking the box, absolutely.
He was laying the wood a couple times on a couple of those hits.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I just, in coverage, though, our middle linebackers are, you know, we need help. We need help at linebacker in the pass pattern. And you know, there was a day, you know, not that many years ago, where that would not have mattered. The idea of dropping a linebacker in coverage was more of you know, fancy defensive play rather than a prereq for the position. It was more defensive creativity than a prereq to play. And you know, now it's critical. You have to have it. And we have linebackers that probably would have made better names for themselves 10 years ago than they are today, even though they are playing very well.
Yeah, they're first and second down linebackers. Enough said. Yes. They just don't need to be on the field in obvious passing situations. It's just, I mean, it's nothing against them. They third and long, they don't need to be in there kind of deal.
Yep. No, hey, you're right. That's the way of saying it.
Let's talk special teams, man. I'm going to pitch you a softball, okay? Because I know you're ready to, like, hit it as hard as you can. Okay, Christian Jones had 3 kickoffs that he fielded, 3 of the 4 in the game. One of them, he took a knee in the end zone. One, he fields the ball and fields it at the 3, so he's got to run forward with it. And one, he fields at the 14 and runs with it. You got to start there, right? Why? And that's not even counting the one that should have gone out of bounds. So, what'd you think about thus bringing in Cyrus Jones there at the end of the ball game to replace Christian Jones on the kickoff return?
Well, I legitimately wonder if Christian's going to hold on to that job. You know, it's easy to tag the fumble. It's absolutely 100% easy to tag the fumble, and you need to tag the fumble, because if he doesn't fumble the ball game there, we win. That's as real as you get. He never should have had an opportunity to fumble the ball. And look, this is my thing, right? He never should have fielded the damn thing. He had to run towards the sideline to catch it, and he caught it at the 11. There is a tremendous, you have to play percentages. You have to. And there is a tremendous high percent that ball goes out of bounds. And so what do I say? They'll give it to you at the 25. Man, order now, and we'll give you the 35. I mean, if that ball goes out of bounds, we get it at the 35.
David, we give it to you at the 35, right? And now the game is definite. Now you definitely have the upper hand, right?
Sure. So
I just don't understand why he keeps taking these balls out of the end zone. And I just don't understand why the mentality is, I can always get it past the 25. I can always get it past the 25. No, you can't always get it past the 25.
We're not seeing it. I mean, we're not seeing it. If we went and looked at our average drive start, you know, it wouldn't be 35 or 42 or 38. You know, it would be 25, 26, 24, you know, kind of in that ballpark. And so your average drive start is where they give it to you anyways. And so why risk an injury? Why risk a turnover? Why risk? Oh, those things never happen until they do. And they cost you a ball game.
Well, and to keep it real again, maybe after his first successful one, right? He just felt like, well, today is my day. Cause the very first kick, they kick it to the 3 yard line. He returns it 38 yards to the 41 yard line. Opening kickoff. Okay.
It's
so
not,
maybe he's like,
yeah.
I'm just saying, maybe he said, oh, I got this one 38 yards. I'm going to keep returning them.
It's not like he hasn't had success. I mean, you know, in all fairness, he has had success returning the kicks. And so, you know, there's a little bit of an art. There's a little bit of science to when do you return it and when do you don't. You know, when the ball clearly is going to go into the end zone, I mean, hell, you're returning it out of the end zone. I mean, you're almost having to dodge stepping out of bounds to catch the ball. You know the ball's going to go out of bounds, and they're going to give it to you, you know, heck, almost in your midfield. And you take that. That is free money. You do not go out of business making a profit. And when they will give it to you at the 25, they'll give it to you at the 35, you take it. You take it. The whole thing about, you know, Saban's philosophy on offense and, you know, for the longest time has been just take what the defense gives you. Well, hell, the officials will give you this. I don't know why you don't take it. And you know, and I hate to kind of just pile on one guy, but, you know, you spotted when we watched the replay of the opening kickoff because we wanted to see, well, how is it that Adam Griffith kicked the ball, barely went, you know, 15 yards off the ground and it, you know, it looked like a waffle floating through the air. You know, how does he do that so atrociously? And so we went back and watched it again and they, you know, we had to have a guy, hold the ball because it kept blowing off the tee. So it just happened. It was Christian Jones and he went all, you know, peanuts and, you know, took his finger off the ball a full second before, Adam had a chance to kick the ball. And so when you think a ball is on a tee and it's leaning backwards, it's got backwards lean. Well, when you're holding it and then he took his finger off the ball, I mean, it's going to fall one direction or another. And it looked like he was kicking a ball that had a forward lean or a sideways lean rather than really a true stand up or even a little backwards lean. And so he didn't want to get his finger, kicked. And so, you know, that's what messed us up there. And what that really speaks to is, are we getting the level, you know, say even attention to detail, everything's a process, everything's detail, everything's, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed. Are we not getting that same level of attention on special teams? Because you've got to know, and you've got to practice. Dude, it's not going to hurt your finger. He's not going to kick your finger. You know, I mean, I remember in grade school, I would hold the ball and not want to and remove my hand. And, you know, as my fellow third graders were telling me, it's not going to, you know, no one's kicking your finger. You're not going to hurt your finger. You're not going to hurt your hand. And so to see, you know, a junior or senior, you know, in college do that is just, oh, man, you know, are we not getting that same level of attention in special teams that we're getting in other aspects of the game? It forces me to wonder that.
It does force you to wonder. And that line drive kick that only went to the 7, allowed him to return it 54 yards to our 39-yard line to start the ball game. So sure, you're on the road, and they get the ball to the 39, and you just gave them 3 points to start the game.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. They were very, very quickly in field goal position as a result of that. And in fact, now, I'll give a little bit of credit. Once the decision to take your finger off the ball has been made and the kick is bad, you got to evaluate differently from there. Prishon did go on to actually make the what would have been a touchdown saving tackle. And there's a part of me that just wonders, did he know that he had flubbed up? Oh crap, that was a bad kick, a low line drive kick. Our coverage team doesn't have the chance to get down the field, so they're better getting this return. And I know it's my fault, so I damn well better tackle him. You know, there's a part of me that's like,
I better wonder, get him.
Yes, I better be the one to save this touchdown because this touchdown's on me. And there's you wonder, is that something that was going through his mind?
Hey, let's talk about a couple more things. There's unfortunately lots to talk about on special teams today. I want to pitch you another softball. So, you said you wanted to see our punter punt, man. Well, you got your wish, right? He had 6 punts on the game. Talk a little bit about that punt at the end of the second half and what we heard the commentators talk about right there for Cyrus's big play.
Well, and that was just beautiful because he was punting from, well deep in our territory. And, there was 50, we stopped and watched it and listened to the commentators and it was a point of emphasis while we were watching it. There's 51 seconds, in half at that time. And so
Hey David, he was at our 18, man. I'm sorry. He's at our 18 yard line when he punted.
There you go. So deep in our territory. And look, we've been to Alabama games where we'll flub a punt and then give the opponent an opportunity to get a field goal or even score a touchdown. And so, what you need to do there is just punt the tar out of the ball, flip the field, go to half. And so he just skyrocketed that ball. And, say whatever you want to about Vern Lundquist and Gary Danielson. I don't think they're as bad as some people think, but that's fine. But one thing you can argue with is those guys have seen a lot of football. They have absolutely seen a lot of football. They have forgotten more football than the average person will know. And there's just a reality to that. And as soon as he booted that ball, Vern just goes, oh my. And Gary Danielson, said, well, there's halftime. He so flipped the field, and it was a 60-plus-yard kick. I mean, it was just a thing of beauty. It was phenomenal. And, Cyrus Jones on that next, their first play, they kind of pitch it out. And make no bones about it. It was a face mask. Could have been flagged. All right, so let's be very realistic. But it wasn't. And we've had good calls go for us. We've had calls go against us. And so, that calculus over time balances out. And so we got a touchdown there. And and the point that I made when we were watching it was if there's any way to credit a punter with a touchdown, J.K. Scott needs to be credited with that touchdown. Coach hunted him down on the sideline to give him, an attaboy. That's the type of, you do the little things, you play through the end of the play, you don't leave, so the same thing we're talking about, are we getting this level of attention on detail on special teams? Well, this is a player and a unique ability that he has that allows us to maximize, right? Because so many times we would have just hoped that the other team doesn't get an opportunity for a field goal. Here, we pinned them back and actually got an opportunity for a touchdown. I could keep going, but gosh, this kid. Now, look, I want to see him punt. I didn't want to see 6 in a ball game, but, man, he was pretty impressive. And his average on the day, Tommy, was 6 punts, and he had a shank. He had an absolute stinker. He had a 33-yarder. And so, including the 33-yarder, he averaged almost 52 yards.
No, that is phenomenal. And when I jumped, the reason I jumped in a minute ago on that yardage was just to state that we were at our 18, and his 64-yard punt put them to their 18. Isn't that just flipping the field in the true sense of the word? Going from our 18 to their 18? Are you kidding me? And later in that half, he had a 60-yarder when we were at our 5-yard line. So, and you know, when we're sitting here, David, and we are we're sitting here up 17-10 in the fourth quarter, and he punts from his 5-yard line after that delay of game. It's a 60-yarder. I mean, really? So I wanted to spend a few minutes from that because this kid's just fun to watch. Hey, I want to talk about Adam Griffith for a second. He only got to attempt 3 field goals on the game. Unfortunately, there's a lot on special teams to cover here. All 3 of these were in the second half. You know, he makes a 44-yarder. He misses a 51. He misses a 46. I think this kid's a good kicker. I think that's a lot to ask of a kicker that all 3 of his attempts are at 44 yards or greater.
Yes.
We talked earlier why that's the case. We talked earlier about you can't get lost yards there. You can't have penalties here. I think they set him up for failure. They put him in a very difficult situation.
It goes back to, you know, and I wonder if you disagree or agree, but it so reminds me of that LSU game where we were outside of the range of our short kicker. At that time we had the 2, right? And so we were outside of Shelley's range, and so we had to, kind of let Cade do it. And it was a younger Cade, and he wasn't nearly as accurate as how he finished his career. And, it put us in situations where we had scoring opportunities, scoring drives, and we couldn't capitalize. And it just so felt like that in the Ole Miss game.
Oh, I would agree with you for all the reasons that you just stated. It just, I just wanted to address it because it was like, you know, he didn't have any chip shots. He didn't have any gimmies. And this kid's made several field goals on the season already from over 40 yards. And I just hate it for him that it went the way. I don't want, you know, one player does not get this loss. Blake Sims does not get this loss. Adam Griffith does not get this loss. You know, none of one player gets this loss. So I just wanted to point that out.
No, and as harsh as maybe I was a minute ago, I don't put the loss solely at the feet of Christian Jones either. It was a team loss. It was a team loss. There are more than one different things that we could have done to win this game. You know, we lost. I want to give Ole Miss credit, but I don't want to just categorically say that, oh, well, they're just a better team and we just lost to a better team. I think that's faulty analysis too. If we played them 10 more times, I don't think they beat us 8 times, right?
No.
And that's what a superior team would do. They're not a superior team, of that category. Would we split? No, I don't even think we'd split. You know, I think that we would. I think we are the better team. If we played 10 times, we'd beat them 6 or 7 times.
Yes.
I mean, I believe that. That doesn't mean they're not a good team. That doesn't mean on any given day they can't beat us. Obviously, that's not true. But I think that we did enough to ourselves to prevent us to win. And then, you know, if you throw in the injuries, then that's a mighty lot to overcome. And we didn't. We didn't overcome it.
No, this team's going to recover. You know, I hearken back to the 2 years this team, you know, Alabama won a national championship with one loss. And fortunately for us, there's a playoff system this year. If you're going to lose a game, it's better to lose one early. If you're going to lose a game, it's better to lose one when several other top 25 teams lose as well. And I think this team's going to, you know, it's a hokey phrase that's used, but this team is going to get better from this.
We've got to, though. I mean, there's a lot, you know, we can just say it and hope it's true. We can say it and we can believe it. The question mark that I would put on that is, are we going to get good enough? Because I hate to say Mississippi State looks better than, I don't know, you know, since Jackie Sherrill was there back in, you know, back in the hell of a, what is it, the 90s. They, you know, when they started the season 10-0, and they're looking every bit as good as they did at that time. And then, you know, and of course there's Auburn, and, you know, Tennessee's looked as good as they've looked in, you know, nearly a decade. So, we've got a lot of work to do. I'm not saying we can't get better, but phew, we've got a lot of work to do.
We do, but there is still a path there that gets us to where we want to go. And I think we're still going to see this team and play in the Georgia Dome a second time this season.
Well, I want that to be true. And so, you know, we're going to have to see some of that improvement. And so talking about team improvement, we face this Saturday, we're going to go to town with Arkansas Razorbacks, and they're proving themselves to be one of the more improved teams in the conference as well. How do you think we stack up, and what sort of prediction do you have for us against the Razorbacks?
You know, Arkansas is a team that gave Auburn everything they wanted halfway through that ball game earlier this season. They were very good at running the ball, setting up the play action. Fortunately, I think we are a defense that is set up to stop the run. And so I feel pretty good about how we match up because of the way we play the run. And so I think this is going to be a game we're going to come out. We're going to be ready for some redemption. I think this is going to be a game where Arkansas is going to score some points. It's not going to be some of the lopsided victories that we've had in the past. But I do see we're going to see something like a 31-10 ball game, 31-13. I think we're going to pull away from this team in the second half and put an exclamation point on this victory.
Yeah, I think, I think the way you set that up is about right. The things that they do, the things that they are going to want to do, are the types of things that we're set up to stop. We gave our linebackers a little bit of grief because of what they can't do. What they can do is play a running team very, very well. And Arkansas has a tight end, a very good tight end, and I think they're going to try to attack that part of the field. If we do what we do, and, you know, one of the things that Saban is kind of known for is taking away what you like to do. And if you think about, we're going to put our linebackers in the box and we're going to attack your run, and then we're going to put a free safety or safety on that's going to kind of mirror and take away your tight end. If we can successfully do those two things, I think we can put some stranglehold on the Arkansas offense. And, if they score 7, 10, 13 points, you know, I can still see that. But if we can play downhill at linebacker and we can put a safety on their tight end, I don't see them keeping up with us scoring. And, you know, upper 30s into the 40s might be something that we could put on. You know, 31-13, I like sort of the geometry of that. Maybe it's 38-13. Maybe it gets up to 42, depending upon how good of a day some of the youngsters have. But I think this is a team we're gonna feel much better about our team a week from now, because we're gonna have us play someone that we've matched up very, very well against.
Well, hopefully that is the case because of their ability to try to focus on the run. They are coming off a bye week. And so they're catching us at home after an open date. And so it gives them 2 weeks to prep for us. You know, they last played a Texas A&M team that they had beaten and let them get back in the game. They were up 28-14. They let them score 14 points in the fourth quarter and then lose in overtime. And so their only two true tests this year has been at Auburn and home against Texas A&M. And they were hanging in there through a half a ball game. So that's why I think we're going to see a team that gives us a slugfest early.
Yeah, they're going to be ready to get back on the field after knowing that they kind of pissed away a game. They're going to be mad. They're going to be ready to fight, and they're going to see that we're not invincible, right? Because they're going to say, well, Ole Miss can do that, we can too. So they're going to give us a lot. You know, maybe getting into the 40s is might be a bit much, but I do think, you know, this is a team that we handle. I do think we add some points late, you know, maybe the 31-13 is the right score. But I think it is going to be a slugfest. And, you know, even if it is that type of score, I think it'll be one of those games where you can say the game was closer than the final score.
No, absolutely. Well, I'm definitely ready to flip the page. I'm ready to stop talking about this last week, and I'm ready to talk about a good victory here next week.
Absolutely. Well, I will toast to that. And with that, hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. Check us out on iTunes. And, hey, go to iTunes and leave us a review. Let us know what you think. We haven't yet gotten a review this season, and we'd love to see some authentic reviews. And we'll call you out on the air if you do that for us. We greatly appreciate it. But, hey, this has been another edition of the podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, T-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.